My guest at this time is William J. Murray. He is chairman of the Religious Freedom Coalition, and he's also the author of My Life Without God, now in its 30th anniversary edition, published by WND Books. Mr. Murray is most famous for being the son of famed atheist Madeline Murray O'Hare, who challenged a public school Bible reading and prayer at the Supreme Court and won. And he, of course, became a believer in Jesus Christ in 1980 and has quite a story to tell. If you haven't already read the book from previous editions, it's now available once again. Mr. Murray, thank you very much for being with us.
Great to be on with you today.
You were a young teenager at the time that your mother decided to challenge Baltimore City Schools in court when she discovered that the junior high she was about to enroll you in allowed the Lord's Prayer and Bible reading in class. At the time, I know, because you were raised in her home with extended family, that there wasn't a lot of religious discussion. What were you thinking as she launched this very public fight?
Well, one would have to go back just a little bit, and the fact that the reality was this all came about because of her Marxism and inability to hold down a job and an attempted defection to the Soviet Union. She would never have discovered that there was any prayer in the schools at all or known about it had she not attempted to defect to the Soviet Union in the August of 1960 and dragging me and my little brother along, thinking that this was some kind of a utopian society where she could finally get a job that lasted for more than 30 days, and they were going to educate her kids and give her free Obamacare, even though it wasn't called Obamacare there, and so forth and so on, and they wouldn't let her in. They sent her back. They sent her back, and she dragged me and my little brother back, and we didn't get back to the United States until well into September. School had started, and that is really how it was even discovered that there was prayer in the school by her in order for her to bring a lawsuit. And the reasoning was that there was just anger. There was anger. She wanted to go to this utopian, godless society, which was the Garden of Eden on Earth, so to speak. She couldn't get in there. And now this horrible capitalist country was going to have her children say the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag and learn to respect the flag and learn to respect God. And she couldn't handle that. And that's how the prayer case really began.
You write in the book, Bill, about how it was really in the wake of World War II that she came back bitter and angry and then drifted away from God. Do you believe it was her atheism that led her to Marxism or vice versa?
Oh, no. It was Marxism that led her to atheism. She had a dysfunctional, argumentative personality that she was unable to hold down a job. And that led her to the unemployment lines, and communists and Marxists and Nazis and the Ku Klux Klan and every other weirdo organization in philosophy in the world, they all recruit their people out of the welfare lines, they don't get them off of Wall Street or Ivy League colleges or from investment bank ranks. They get them out of the unemployment lines. And she was recruited into that. I think the atheism came right along with it because she felt life was unfair to her, and therefore God was unfair to her.
Talking with Bill Murray, the book is My Life Without God. And, sir, the picture you paint throughout this book is clearly of a very dysfunctional family. There's no really other way to say it. And it clearly impacted your life even after you were outside of her house. Talk about what it was like to enter the real world after that type of upbringing and why it led to so much turmoil in your marriages, with your child eventually having to be raised by the mother you didn't like, and all sorts of things.
Well, you know, this is I went from being an atheist and Marxist to a libertarian and atheist, an Ayn Randian. And the reasoning is very, very simple. I was able to hold down a job, and I didn't like the Marxism or the tax money being taken out of my check, but I kept that atheism with it. And when you are the pure libertarian and Randian type of personality, of course God is not present, and your all of your goals in life are to have the best booze, the best sex, and the best food. And when you live that kind of a lifestyle, it's self-destructive.
And so as you moved forward, eventually you obviously tell the story later in the book in January of 1980, how you became a believer through a very vivid dream. You then found the Bible next to the pornography at a late night mart and gave your life to Christ that night. Do you, looking back, see steps along the way that led you to that, or do you see this as as this dream being the major event?
Oh, no, no, absolutely. There were all kind of steps. There's no Saul of Tarsus experience on the road to Damascus. In fact, didn't really happen to him that way, but it's everybody looks for that. Everybody's supposed to have this moment that goes boing and suddenly they become a Christian. I've actually never met anybody that's happened to, and it didn't happen to me. It was a long road. It included having my life nearly destroyed by living that libertarian type lifestyle and using alcohol excessively, winding up going to a 12-step program, along the way reading a novel called Dear and Glorious Physician about Luke by Taylor Caldwell. At the end of the book, it said that the answer was in the Bible. The dream was really had to do with that book and the images in the book and the message that the Bible, that story of Luke was continued in the Bible. It wasn't a dream that came out of nowhere. It was more or less an awareness that came together because of my quest for God, as God was healing me from a problem I had, but I didn't know who He was. So it was a long journey. It was a complicated journey, and it didn't happen overnight.
Now, of course, you're head of the Religious Freedom Coalition, which is working in exactly the opposite way that your mother was for so many years. As you look back now, do you believe that if your mother hadn't launched the case, that somebody else wouldn't, we'd essentially be in the same place now, or do you believe your family played a critical role in a way that others perhaps wouldn't have?
No, it was at times that made her rich. That was a right place, right time situation. There were several cases that were headed to the Supreme Court. One case that had to do with New York, with a state-authored mandatory prayer that was found unconstitutional in 1962. There was a companion case that out of Pennsylvania that went with her case to the Supreme Court and was decided in 1963. If it wouldn't have been her case and the Pennsylvania case in 63, it would have been another case in 64. This was an activist Supreme Court that if they could have passed Roe v. Wade, then they would have, and it wouldn't have taken as long as it did. This was Earl Warren, and he wanted to change America because the Congress, in his view, wouldn't, and this was just going to happen.
Last question before we let you go, sir. In the role that you've had now for a while as head of the Religious Freedom Coalition, what is your essential argument as to why religious freedom in the public square and throughout American life is vital?
Well, religious liberty is the cornerstone of all liberty. And when it is under attack by the administration as it currently is, all liberty is under attack. Very quick explanation. If you don't have freedom of religion, then you don't have freedom of assembly. If you don't have freedom of religion, you don't have freedom of speech. If you don't have freedom of religion, you don't have freedom of press. If the government of the United States can tell you that you can't publish certain things about religious issues, or you can't say things, or you can't assemble in certain ways or certain places about religious issues, then they can tell you that you can't speak or write or assemble on any issue. And so this is the cornerstone. Thomas Jefferson understood this. This is why he referred to it as the first liberty. It's why he encapsulated it in the Virginia Declaration of Religious Freedom. This is the cornerstone of all liberty, of all freedom. Once you take that cornerstone away, all of the other liberties that we have are in danger.
Sir, unfortunately, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you very much for being with us and telling your story.
Thank you. God bless.
God bless you, sir. William J. Murray is chairman of the Religious Freedom Coalition. His book, My Life Without God, is now in its 30th anniversary edition, published by WND Books. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.